Gun violence survivors have wounds that may heal in time, but the lasting trauma remains and can take its toll in many ways. A partnership between UC Health and Cincinnati Children's aims to disrupt cycles of trauma by providing victims of violence with resources and support. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss how the program is working are Cincinnati Children's Director of Trauma Services, Dr. Mira Kodigal. Welcome back, Dr. Kodigal.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
And Hope and Shield Network Violence Prevention Professional, Giovanni Crawford. Thanks for being here, Giovanni.
Thanks for having me as well.
Dr. Kodigal, after the immediate medical treatment that a victim of gun violence needs, and I know that can be substantial, what comes next?
So we actually start the work of the Hope and Shield Network, which Giovanni is a really key player in, from the moment that patients arrive in our hospital doors. And we recognize that those patients and their families need ongoing support over the days that they're in the hospital and then over the 6 to 12 months after they've left the hospital. And so what we're really trying to do is to understand what needs they might have and figure out how we can link with community-level resources, hospital-level resources, city-level resources to provide those supports to those patients and their families.
Giovanni, this is kind of personal, so I hope you don't mind if I ask. I understand you were a victim of gun violence yourself when you were a teenager. What support did you feel like you needed then? Was there something you felt like you needed that you didn't get that you helped to provide today in the role you have?
Yes, just being able to, with food insecurity, you know, I just wish, because that was some of the things that drove the behavior of the individual who victimized me at this point in time in my neighborhood, because we was experiencing this, you know, in those days when I was 17 years old. So just those, I think food insecurity was a huge one for us.
Yeah. Do you mind talking a little bit more about that? Because I think for some people, that connection doesn't seem like an obvious connection, food insecurity and violence.
Well, when you got underground markets such as drug trade, stealing, or things like that, gun violence contributes to that and impacts that. So when you got individuals that may be causing stress or just all over the place as far as their mindsets, due to the fact that they can't survive, they come from this survival mindset, it just affects their behavior and our attitudes at times.
Okay, so some of that illegal behavior is happening because they need to eat. They need to feed their families. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. They're operating from a survival state of mind, really. Yeah.
Dr. Kodigal, you mentioned the Hope and Shield Network. Can you tell us a little bit more about what it is and what it does?
Absolutely. So the Hope and Shield Network was founded last year in 2024 as a partnership between UC Health and Cincinnati Children's with the City of Cincinnati, really to be able to provide these ongoing wraparound services to victims of gun violence in the City of Cincinnati in hopes of actually reducing injury rate over time. So it is an example of a hospital-based violence intervention program, and those have been shown to reduce re-injury rates by as much as 45% over time. So that's our real long-term goal. But in the short term, we recognize, and this is where food security is one example of those social needs that people have, that historically, neighborhoods that have historically been disinvested in for various reasons are less likely to have grocery stores, less likely to have access to food, are also the same neighborhoods that have other disinvestment over time, and that results in some of the higher rates of gun violence. So sometimes the linkage is really direct. Somebody's hungry and they're figuring out how to survive, but sometimes it's just a reflection of the underlying state of disinvestment of those communities. And we know that food insecurity rates are the highest in Cincinnati in the neighborhoods that are also the highest centers of gun violence for our city.
Giovanni, what are some more of those needs that you see? What are some of the more of those supports that you offer as a Hope and Shield Network violence prevention professional?
We offer housing. We offer counseling, peer support. We really wear a lot of hats. You know, it's case by case. Every family's different and circumstances is a lot different. But I think for the most part, it's just employment, lack of education. A lot of individuals that we're serving maybe didn't even finish high school. So that just hurts them as far as when they're talking about employment and things like that. So just the literacy levels as well is something that we've been focused on. And also just connecting our patients and participants to a primary care physician. We've been observing that a lot of our participants before they came through the ED, they didn't even have a primary care physician. And I think that says a lot about an individual.
Yeah, it sure does. So they come to the emergency department because they've been the victim of this very violent, you know, a gunshot wound, which is serious, but there's no primary care physician to say, hey, follow up with your doctor about all these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been able to also be able to provide transportation, which would have been a barrier to a lot of our participants. It amazed me every time when you got individuals that have severe injuries and follow-up is important, it's medically needed, and they're not able to get it just due to transportation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because I imagine it's hard to ride a bus if you're dealing with like lots of different injuries, and even bus fare is a challenge for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. Even like I said, when I was a victim, my mom, you know, she had to take off. So and at this point, her job did not have certain benefits and things like that. So once I got home and I was recovering and things like that, mom couldn't afford to take off because she had to make a decision. It was either, you know, pay the bills or make sure I go to get to my appointments or things like that. So that's something. And a lot of our participants comes from single parent households and things like that. So that's just another barrier.
Yeah, that's a really powerful example. Dr. Codigal, how many people have enrolled in the program so far?
So we have about 65 patients who've enrolled. I would say, you know, we have obviously started in August and we've been sort of slowly ramping up. So we're really happy that in the last few months we've been able to screen 100% of the patients who've come through the doors of both institutions to make sure that they, you know, understand the resources that are available to them and to figure out who's eligible and not eligible for the program. And then we've enrolled about 65 patients since we went live. Our first patient enrollment was in September. So really excited about the progress that we've made with that patient population.
Yeah. Giovanni, talk about that enrollment process. Are you one of the people kind of on the front lines of that, talking to people about the program and what it can do for them?
Yes. So, you know, kind of what Dr. Mira said, from the time they hit our ED, we get alerted as well, and we respond, you know, and when we wait for them, of course, for our medical team to do what they need to do. And then from there, that's when we're trying to build that trust and relationship and offer our service. And it's been wonderful. I'm yet to really see a family say no to our services.
Mm. Does it help? Do you share with them that you've kind of been in their shoes, that you know, have an experience that is really relatable to what they're going through?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes it's good to talk about some of your lived experience as well. When, you know, conversations get so vulnerable and you need individuals to open up to get the information, to get the help that they actually need, that the unspoken cues that they may not speak about because they don't feel comfortable.
Yeah. Well, we are talking about the Hope and Shield Network, a hospital-based violence intervention program in Cincinnati. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Giovanni, when you're having those conversations with families, and I'm not asking you to break any confidences or anything like that, but are there general questions that come up a lot from the families that you're dealing with? I guess I wonder, do any of them express, like, are they hesitant about being involved in the program for any reason? Do they have any nerves about it?
No, not really. They're really open. They're receptive towards it. We got a great team. You know, I think, you know, each and every one of our VPPs and the staff that's a part of this program does a great job at, like, converting individuals and making sure that they understand our services.
Yeah. What are the questions that come up for individuals? Like, are they worried it's going to cost them money, stuff like that?
Yeah. Is it free? You know, yeah. Some of them ask, you know, why are you trying to help me? You know, am I a part of some this or that? There's things like that. Are you police at times? They may even ask us that, you know, are you with law enforcement? Because sometimes they think we're trying to solve the case when we're really just trying to provide service so we can stop to disrupt this cycle of gun violence.
Yeah. That's tough because I would imagine some people might be interested in help from the police to solve it, and then other people might have bad interactions with the police, might be nervous about that.
Yeah. And that's when they feel more comfortable talking to myself or one of the other VPPs.
Yeah. Dr. Codigal, I guess I wonder, are there, that takes me to this question, are there things that victims of gun violence or their families will talk about with Giovanni and some of his colleagues that maybe they're not comfortable talking with a doctor about?
100%. And that's really a huge driver of why we started this program. You know, I think Dr. Makeley, who's my counterpart at UC Health, she and I both know we care a lot about patients. We work hard at how we build those relationships, but they're never going to have the same relationship with me that they may with our VPPs based on their lived experience, based on the fact that they live in the same neighborhoods or they may know the same people. And so recognizing that trust is a critical part, especially for communities where the trust with healthcare systems may be fractured, for us to be able to reach out and for people to see us as really all we care about is what's best for you and what it is that you need. And I'm going to brag on these guys for a second, which is
Please
to
do.
Say that you know, Giovanni speaks to some of the successes that they've had, but they really the amount of impact that they've had on the lives of individuals that have come through this program, even in 6 months, as ability to get a driver's license, people who've gotten a job, people who've identified housing, who've never had an apartment that was theirs, and now they actually have an apartment, right? Being able, and these aren't just resources that are ours at UC Health or Cincinnati Children's, they're really connecting the dots, you know, working with Karen Rumsey and her team at Cincinnati Police on victims of violence and what resources are available to them, working with CMHA or other groups, working with nonprofit organizations and counseling groups, like really trying to figure out how do we link the resources that exist in the city to patients who need them.
That is really complicated, Giovanni, because, I mean, as a reporter in Cincinnati for many, many years, I've reported on a lot of those resources, and they're a lot and they're all over the place. It's not like it's easy to go to like one stop. Here's a laundry list of all the help that people need. How much energy and effort does it take to really work through that and help people get those resources and what they need from all those different places?
Really just building out our processes and systems, really, because it's kind of, you kind of, when you have these encounters with these individuals, you kind of seeing specific things, you know, education, criminal involvement. So once you got those resources in a direct line, it makes it real simple for our group to really help them navigate and provide that intensive case management for our participants.
Yeah. You say it makes it simple, but to me, I'm thinking you've got like a PhD in helping people, because that's a lot of work and a lot of different places you have to figure out.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a lot of work, and it can become hurtful sometimes at times, you know, because you just, the truth of the reality, can't reach everyone.
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, we are going to continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll discuss the enduring legacy of Kentucky author and artist Harlan Hubbard. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Cincinnati's hospital-based violence intervention program called the Hope and Shield Network. My guests are Cincinnati Children's Director of Trauma Services, Dr. Mira Kodigal, and Hope and Shield Network violence prevention professional, Giovanni Crawford. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. I want to talk about, you mentioned, Dr. Kodigal, food insecurity. You talked about that too, Giovanni, and you've got this produce prescription program that's going to be launching pretty soon. Dr. Kodigal, explain what that is and talk to us about how it works, why it's so important for the families that you're working with.
Absolutely. We're really excited about this. And as an example of one of the many ways in which we're trying to continue to build partnerships outside of our walls to provide resources to our patients. So Councilmember Anna Albee actually made this connection for us a number of months ago around Produce Perks Midwest, which is an organization that works on food delivery, and their Produce RX program, which they've done in the past for diabetes or for infant vitality to try to provide food resources. The goal here is really to identify patients who have food insecurity as a significant need for them when Giovanni and Tevis and Kiana are meeting with families, and then to link them into this program where they will get deliveries of food to their house to allow them to have access to some nutritious foods that they can use in their family.
And how much of a need is there in Cincinnati as a whole, in the people that you're seeing as part of this program?
Yeah, so across the city, when folks have looked, about 20% of adults in the city report some food insecurity in the previous 12 months. But when we look at the neighborhoods from which most of our patients are coming, those numbers are much higher. So some examples, Avondale, 42%, the West End, 46%, Winton Hills as high as 60%. So recognizing there's a really substantial need. When we've asked our patients over the last 6 months, about 65% of our patients have reported food insecurity in the past 6 months, and really a concern about whether or not their food would run out or actually not being able to buy more food when they have run out of food.
And that's really what you mean by food insecurity, right? Not being confident that they're going to be able to have the meals, provide the meals for their families that they need, you know, throughout the day, throughout the week.
Right. Absolutely. Like concern about the ability or the availability of food, or actually truly running out of food and not being able to figure out how you're going to feed yourself or your family.
Yeah. How often does that come up in the conversations you have with the people you're talking to in this program, Giovanni? Is that pretty common?
Well, yeah, it's pretty common, and it's part of our screening process, actually. So in our intake process, that's a question that we definitely ask our participants.
Yeah. And is that, I guess I'm wondering, is that one of those things that they're more likely to talk to you about than maybe a doctor? I don't know. I know for families I've interviewed in the past, there's almost some embarrassment sometimes about that.
Yeah. Yes, I think, and that's why I love our program, because they're so open to talk to us to get their needs met.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Kodagal, what would this produce prescription program do? You mentioned it's food delivery. So do you know kind of exactly how it will work and when it's going to launch?
Yeah, so our hope is that we'll be able to launch in the next few weeks. Our target is May 1st, but we're hoping to maybe even get it off the ground sooner than that. And the goal will really be for families or individuals that identify food security. They will agree to be a part of this program and receive food. They'll provide us with their address so that the food can be delivered. And it's a partnership between Produce Perks Midwest, Findlay Market, and our program and the Hope and Shield Network. And then those foods will be delivered to their house. And they'll actually, depending on household size, determine how much food to deliver. And over 12 weeks, they'll receive deliveries of food in order to help them address some of their food security needs while we try to make sure we're addressing other social needs like employment or access to care so that we can continue to build for each individual a better future for them.
Yeah. And what kind of food are we talking about? This is fresh fruits and vegetables?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. Really focusing on trying to provide families with healthy foods, but also recipes. So recognizing that bringing a bell pepper to someone who doesn't know what to do with a bell pepper is not that helpful. So also providing them with some education around cooking and providing with recipes so that people could actually use what's being brought to them.
Yeah. That makes sense. Do you, is that something that you've started talking to patients about, Giovanni, that this is something that's in the works? I guess I wonder if people are excited about it, or maybe you haven't started talking to people about it yet.
Not as far as talking about it, but just telling them we're trying to get other resources to help them with their needs. So yeah. We haven't really just fully rolled it out for them, though.
Yeah, fair enough. You don't want to get people too excited before it's ready to go. What other needs are you looking at? This produce prescription program sounds like it's a significant addition to what you've been doing. Are there other avenues of help or other resources that you're exploring to kind of round out what you offer?
Dr. Absolutely. So I think mental health is a huge one for our patients. And so thinking about how we can have culturally competent mental health providers that we can connect patients to as they identify mental health needs. And some folks may not. This is where the longevity of the program is really important. They may not say in the first week or the second week that they think that they need mental health support, but we may be able to realize 6 months in that they're having PTSD symptoms or something else where they would benefit from that support. So I think that's one aspect. We've begun, you know, working on our collaborations with Jude Johnson and the Career Pathways Program at the City of Cincinnati so that we can help link folks there for job opportunities. We have met with a number of community organizations, including the Urban League and others, about how can we access the resources that they already have. We don't need to recreate the wheel. We don't need to build all these programs again. What we're trying to say is that, okay, I have a patient and I recognize that they would really benefit from the resources that you're already providing, and how do we link you two together? And so that's, we're trying to do that with a number of community organizations. But mental health, job training, housing is a big one for us. It's a really challenging thing because of the difficulties of affordable housing. So how do we navigate access to housing, and particularly for patients that need to relocate because of safety concerns? So that's the biggest obstacle that we're still trying to figure out how we navigate through.
Yeah. Giovanni, what's the typical age range of the gun violence victims you're dealing with?
Well, our criteria is anyone 44 years and younger and a Hamilton County resident.
Can they be pretty young, though? I mean, do you ever deal with pretty young victims?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot on my caseload, pediatric patients.
Mm. So are these, I mean, I guess that pediatric can be, you know, younger than 18 or so. I mean, how young are some of the people you're dealing with?
As young as 12, 13 years old.
12. What are there specific needs that children that young need when they've been victims of something like this? I would imagine that trauma crosses all kinds of boundaries for age groups, but what are some of the specific help and support you can offer for very young victims?
I think at first, initially, you know, is peer support, because these individuals, their kids, you know, their schools talking about it, the community talking about it. So just trying to help them transition back into school has been something we've been able, our team have been able to do a great job at. Because like I said, I remember when I was 17 and I had to go back to school, and everyone, it was overwhelming that I couldn't even focus, you know, at the education at hand. And so we kind of really helped guide our participants into that and also provide them counseling.
Yeah. Yeah, that has to be hard, because probably everybody wants to ask you about it. Everybody's worried about you, or else they're just nosy and want to know what's going on. I mean, what kind of strategies can young kids have to be able to kind of block out that noise and really focus on schoolwork?
I tell, because a lot of our school, Cincinnati Public Schools, is that, because we've been doing a lot of good work with them as well, is just talk to the counselor. Because every school has a counselor at hand, we always recommend that they speak with a counselor that's at the school as well.
Yeah, that sounds smart.
And I want to just chime in there with one thing, Lucy May, which is that, you know, I think we've had kids as young as even 5 and 6. And I think some of the supports that we have to provide are to the kid themselves, but also to their parents and to their siblings, right? Their sibling may have been there at the time that this, you know, incident happened. Parents are concerned about how they keep their kids safe. And so recognizing that these injuries impact the patient themselves, but also their immediate family and their community more broadly. And that whole level of support is important to try to address the ongoing trauma from community level gun violence.
Sure, especially when we're dealing with a family that might need to move. I mean, that's not a decision that a little kid can make. That's something that the parents have to
exactly
be deeply involved with. Are there other specific needs medically or psychologically that younger patients need that are different from the older patients who come in with
I think the biggest thing is that, you know, we have to work to be able to explain to them what's happening to them and what they might need in future care. And so one of the things that we're really lucky to be able to do is to provide child life resources. You know, we have real experts in helping explain to patients and families, our behavioral health teams, our, you know, rehab team, you know, all of these folks who work really closely with our patients to help them adjust to whatever their new reality might be. But one of the reasons that we really created this program as a joint initiative between the university and Cincinnati Children's was because sometimes if you're 16, you end up at Children's, and sometimes if you're 16, you end up at UC Health. And wanting to make sure that we are really trying to form a bridge to allow those patients to get the same resources regardless of where they go, so that they're able to continue to thrive, you know, and hopefully get to a better place in their life, and that this is a moment that serves as a catalyst for great opportunity.
Well, I would imagine there are cases where a parent has been the victim of gun violence and maybe a child has seen what happened or at least has seen the aftermath. So is that partnership valuable in those cases, too?
Absolutely. And I think really we count on our violence prevention professionals who form these deep, trusting relationships to help us understand what a patient may need. And, okay, that kid has, you know, that adult has a 14-year-old son, and that person really needs support and mental health resources. And how do we make sure we plug them in, too?
Yeah. Giovanni, is there one thing that you wish people understood better or understood more completely about what people go through when they've been victims of gun violence, what families go through?
I would like to say what I say to our participants and families a lot, and even our practitioners. You know, everybody is experiencing life through a different lens, so it's always good to have empathy and humility.
Yeah. And Dr. Kodigal, is there an ultimate goal for this? Do you have goals for how much you want to see this gun violence reduced with the help of this program?
Yeah, so, you know, this intervention is part of the broader Cincinnati structure of Achieving Change Together for Cincy, or ACT for Cincy, which is the Cincinnati City's strategy for reducing gun violence. And so our goal is to keep eliminating it, reducing it, and hopefully one day this is not the leading cause of death for kids in the United States.
Well, I've been talking with Cincinnati Children's Director of Trauma Services, Dr. Mira Kodigal, and Hope and Shield Network Violence Prevention Professional, and I'm going to call you a PhD in helping people, Giovanni Crawford. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Up next, we'll examine the enduring legacy of Kentucky artist and author Harlan Hubbard. This is Cincinnati Edition.